club football, he pisses all over him. So
yeah. It's just Messi. We all know what Messi can do.
A lot of flair, a lot of skill.
People might forget the names, but the streets certainly won't.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the FT LOL podcast. We are back again with another feature session and we've got a very, very special guest for you. I'm honoured today to be joined by footballing legend, top pundit and now an author, Mr. Pat Nevin. Pat, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, very, very well tonight. A very busy day, but it's nice just to sit down and relax and I've not even reached a glass of wine stage yet. I'm on glasses of water still.
Oh, that is shocking at this time of night that you've not hit the wine yet.
I'll get there. I'll get there.
Yeah. Makes your evening viewing all that bit nicer as well. But yeah, you are a busy man. Always see you on the telly. I've got to say, growing up, Thursday nights, Channel 5 were a staple in my household. Always on the telly.
It was very good, actually. Channel 5, the company that did it for them was a company called Sunset and Vine. Very small company, and I think I was writing at the start of Channel 5 and Sunset and Vine. We did it for over a decade, I think. Sunset and Vine are huge now. You know, they do BT stuff and all that. So I had a lovely time there. Some great people I worked with as well. But it was odd, though, because right at the start, I was chief executive of Motherwell. I was still playing at Motherwell. I was doing Radio 5 Live. I was doing, you know, that stuff with Channel 5, but I was also doing some stuff in Ireland as well. So there was only one of me, but it was stretched.
Yeah. And I suppose these days it's not much different. You're always on the telly or on radio.
I generally try to do mostly radio. I do a lot of stuff with Chelsea TV But I really do prefer radio, so I do Radio 5 Live and a variety of other things. But it's kind of funny. I mean, I spend a lot of time going to football games, and instead of me paying it again, people pay me. And what's to complain about?
You can't knock that, can you? Yeah, and you're Chelsea, you're still well connected to the club.
Yeah, I write a column for the website every week, every Tuesday, 1,000 words for that. I've been doing, I think we're on column number 640-something at the moment, so I've been doing it a while. And I do programme notes for the programme for the away team, and I do stuff with Chelsea TV, / Chelsea app. So kind of involved in the club, but, you know, I do things just all over the place. I just do things I like, and as you said at the start there, I'm spending a lot more time writing. I'm just finishing my second book of the last couple of years at the moment, and that'll be finished, I guess, tomorrow. I've been working on that for a wee while. So the writing's great as well, because obviously I write all my own stuff. I'm not ghosted or anything.
So yeah.
If it's rubbish, you can blame me.
I'm sure it won't be. But yeah, I suppose if we get into your sort of childhood and your start with football, is it right that you're a Celtic fan and then you...
Yeah, I was a Celtic fan all the way through to my mid-30s, mid to late 30s. I was fanatical about the club. But a number of things kind of changed. And the kids were getting to an age, my son particularly was wanting to go to football. And there are problems supporting one of the big Glasgow clubs, so...
Mm.
And Hibs were always my second club, so I just switched it around, and Hibs are my team now. And it's, you know, it's cool, it's fine. It's, you know, you can't really call me a glory hunter from Celtic. But it's been lovely, and the club and the fans have been brilliant, particularly with my son, who's now utterly fanatical. And he was at Hibs Ladies yesterday, or the day before yesterday, so he's so fanatical about the club that he goes and sees them all the time. I don't get that many chances to go and see Hibs or any teams now, other than when I go to work. And having said, I don't miss any Chelsea games. I'm always either working at them or I make sure I watch them, because obviously I'm writing about them all the time. So as you will notice, I don't complain about much, but that's a good thing about writing that book that I wrote, the first one, The Accidental Footballer. Apart from the fact it's went down really well and it's sold well and all that sort of stuff, and people have enjoyed the fun side of it. It's just this whole concept, which I tried really hard not to be a professional footballer and failed, which is a kind of unusual position to come into. But I always loved playing, and it wasn't through lack of love of playing that I just wanted to do other things. I was studying for a degree, etc., and ended up having a wee go at football for a couple of years, and that ended up lasting 19, so it was quite a long career. So I did play with a lot of players.
Yeah, I think you'll be a top guest. I don't want a one club man, that's for sure, on this sort of
that
topic.
Makes it hard.
So
it'll
be interesting. Yeah. So did you sort of start football quite young, or did you get into it?
Oh no, I was always at the age of four. My dad was a coach. Just coached me each day, but I just loved it. Where I come from, the East End of Glasgow, there weren't really many options of what to do. Although my family are very keen in education, but that's just what you did. You played football all the time, and they talk about getting expert at something by doing 10,000 hours. Well, I certainly had my 10,000 hours under my belt long before I was 10 years of age, and that helps, because that helps the skills, and you don't have to look at the ball anymore. So I was fanatical playing football, but the concept of actually being a professional footballer and making a living out of it, I was probably about 10 years into my career before I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do that, which sounds really weird, you know, but I kind of was doing it for the pure joy and the fun of it at the start. But it kept on going better and better. It was probably by the time I left Everton, which is, I played a couple of years with Clyde, 5 years with Chelsea, 4 and a bit years with Everton. And then I thought, all right, then, it's a career. I'll accept it. But up until then, I was loving it, enjoying it, and doing it for the pure fun. And I think that's a good thing to be. If you're a creative in any industry, if you do it for the love of it, you'll probably be better at it. If you do it through fear and fear of failing, as I say, particularly if you're a creative person, it doesn't matter if it's football or anything, probably won't be quite as productive. It's certainly for my personality, that's how it worked. And I was trying to explain that, you know, during this book, that, you know, people go, oh, you didn't want to be a footballer, did you not like football? And I'm thinking, precisely the opposite. In fact, I loved playing more than just about anybody else that I knew that was playing. Yeah. They were doing it a lot of them were doing it as a job, a lot of them felt the stress of it, whereas I'd never been nervous in my life, except for one game halfway through my career. And it was a friendly. I mean, really? You play in Scotland, England games, you play Liverpool, Everton, you play Chelsea, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, you do all them things. Not a thing. Not a sausage. And then I go out and play a friendly. But the friendly was against Celtic. It was at Celtic Park.
Okay.
And I didn't even know what nails were. And then the manager, I said I wasn't feeling very well. The manager checked me out. And the doctor checked me out. And then the manager started laughing. He goes, you're nervous. And I'd never felt it before, so not something I knew a great deal about.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's the way to be at the end of the day. If you can enjoy what you're doing and you're not even thinking about it as a job in any way, then you're going to achieve great things. And
well, you can, and I mean, you also have to be very lucky. You have to be dedicated. So that's the other thing to remember. It wasn't like I just waltzed in when I was doing it. Before I did it, I trained all the time. And when players would go home at, you know, midday or 1 o'clock, I'd go back out after lunch and I'd do an hour and a half myself with my tactical and technical abilities. So I was very dedicated to the craft, but I actually still enjoyed it. So I loved every day's training and I loved every game that I played as well. So it was kind of handy because I nearly played 850. So it's kind of handy if you do something that often, you better enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so if we get into your team then, what formation have you gone with?
I've gone with an odd one. I'm going 4-3-2-1. The first thing you'll notice about that, no wingers, which is unusual because I spent most of my career playing on the wing. But the point is, I'd never felt a winger. I'd never played in wing before I joined Chelsea. I was always a striker or a 10. And wingers I like, and wide players I like, and I'll turn my phone off because I get messages all over the place here. And I think when you look at the modern game, you know, watch them at Chelsea or Man City, those wide attackers aren't wingers. They're just wide attackers or attackers who can adapt. And certainly through my, if I've been watching since I stopped, and you're quite a bit younger, I saw a player about 13, 14 years ago, 12, 13 years ago, whatever. And I saw him for the first time, and within 10 minutes of seeing him play, I thought, that's how I was trying to do it. That's what I was trying to do. And that player was David Silva. And you wouldn't class David Silva as a winger. You would class him as an attacking creative player, closer to a 10 than anything else, but you can play wide. So anyway, so it's 4-3-2-1, but adaptable within it.
Yeah, some call that the Christmas tree.
Yeah, I mean, I've not got any big thing about any particular systems myself. Just be adaptable to the. I mean, my most favoured one is basically the tiki-taka, Barcelona stroke, old Johan Cruyff stroke, current Manchester City. That's my favourite, and it's been since the early '70s because that's what Cruyff and Holland were, and the Dutch and Ajax were trying to do back then. So. The English in particular were a long way behind the curve. They were still long. Even during my career, which drove people like me mad because we were trying to do something a wee bit more sophisticated. But they caught up in the end. England's doing okay now.
Yeah, the best they've done in, 50-odd years.
They're good to watch. They're good to watch as well.
Yeah. Okay, so between the sticks.
Right, so all of these are very hard decisions because, as I say, I played with a lot of players. When I was at Chelsea, I played with a goalkeeper called Eddie Nesuiki, and he was brilliant, and he would have got so many caps for Wales. Problem was, there was a guy in front of him who was quite good, Neville Southall, who I then went on to play with at Everton. There's another man in this frame as well, was Andy Gorham. I played with him for Scotland, but also he came to Motherwell near the end of my career. And Gorham was pretty close. He was up there as a shortstopper. He was absolutely extraordinary. But Neville Southall, to be fair, he was probably the best in the world at the time. It doesn't look like a goalkeeper, it looks less like one now. But he would do five astonishing things at training every day. And he would just save stuff that you'd no right to save. And the best bit of explanation I give to people about Neville, when I was playing with Everton, we were doing a drill one day, play the ball up to the 18-yard line, someone lays it back, and then you go on and try and score with a shot from 20 yards. And there's good players there, you know, and good finishers like Graham Sharp, Scottish international, Tony Cotty, English international, Sheedy, Irish international, myself, Norm Whiteside, lots of top players. And after 20 minutes, nobody'd scored. You know, time and time again, Neville saving it. And that's quite impressive, isn't it? That's quite good. Except Neville wasn't using his hands. That's who he was. Right?
Okay.
We were whipping the balls into the top corner and he was jumping up and heading it away. You know, he could read your body position. It's extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. And, I mean, I write quite a lot about Big Nev and her adventures in my book because I had to try and figure a way around him. And I'd had figured a way how to beat him when it was one-on-ones because he was very good at one-on-ones as well. But I perfected this thing very early in my life. It was basically a scoop. It wasn't a chip, a scoop. It made famous by Karl Poborski about 7 or 8 years after I'd been doing it, of course, but no one remembered him doing it. And it didn't matter how good you are. If you scoop a ball about 20 feet in the air and it then lands on inside the goal, unless you've got a stepladder, you ain't saving it. Instead of trying to save it in training, Neville just ignored it and started chasing me and would try and rugby tackle me every time I did it. So he was a very special guy and an interesting character as well and very, very funny. And if you read his tweets now, you'll find them incredibly funny. But he really was ultra, ultra world class.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I first got into football, I think he was either retired or he might have been at Bradford at the time. So he's past his best. But everything I hear about Neville Southall is like he was the best in the league for 10 years.
I would say he was the best in the world.
Yeah.
You know, for a period, he certainly was. The best shortstopper, without doubt. Because he used to defy physics quite frequently. You know, he's gone one way, turn the other, and flick it away. And it was an extraordinary thing to watch and try and beat him. And it made you better because you had to try and do really complicated things to beat him.
Yeah.
And like most great goalkeepers, they hated getting beat. So the real sadness is, if you want to go on YouTube, you can get great bits from just about any players that you want, you know? You know, and you can, if you put in Pan Evans' skills, you'll see a run of my skills and goals, and that's great. You don't really get that with keepers, do you?
No.
So all the best stuff that Neville did, it's kind of, it's not exactly a loss, but you'd find it incredibly hard to find it now. You'll see the odd great save that's remembered, but to be fair, he was doing it every week, time and time and time again. He was exceptional.
Yeah, that's a very strong start. I think, he's one of the only goalies ever to get PFA Player of the Year, weren't he, or Football Writers?
Yes, that's very good knowledge. I'm very impressed, because it's hard for a goalkeeper to get that. But as players, we kind of, when we see greatness, we get it. We generally get it. And I always stuck by the PFA Player of the Year. Obviously, I became chairman after a while of the PFA. But the players, there's lots of awards of Player of the Years and the rest of it. And you can even go to the World Player of the Year, etc. But the one that the players want is the player's player. Because that's the people you absolutely want to be respected by, but apart from anyone else. So again, that one as a goalkeeper was extra special. So played against a lot of great keepers. As I say, Andy Gorham was extraordinary as well, but you'll struggle to beat him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So right back.
Oh, right back. Now there's quite a lot of right backs I played with. With Scotland, Richard Gough used to play right back quite a bit, and he was extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. When I was at Chelsea, I had a great understanding with the right back behind me for 2 or 3 years, Stevie Clark, who has gone on to do quite good things. He also was one of those players that could play just about any position, you know, along the back line and in midfield. Miles ahead of his time. I mean, we were doing underlapping. Now and again, you'll see somebody in the match today going, wow, that's an underlap. And I'm thinking, yeah, we were doing it in 1985. We worked on it, Clarky and I. No, he's a fabulous player. But it's a tough one between him and a guy called Ian Snodden. And Ian Snodden, I played with at Everton. And for a period, very similar to Clarke, it didn't matter where he played him. You know, back line, midfield, didn't matter. He was always, always absolutely exceptional. Now, he's not one of the most well-known players, Snods. And the reason for it is he was just about to break into the England team at right back. And he would have held that position maybe for a decade, I think. But he got an injury. He had a really bad hamstring injury, and he lost some of pace after that. So he was a great player, lightning quick, hard as nails, had that wee bit of nastiness about him as well. So had all those things. And the best compliment I could ever play as a PF player was, I would really have liked to play against him. Now, does that sound odd? But I wanted to play against the best. That was And Snods was one of those. I'll probably stick with Clarkie, Stevie Clark, in that position. And probably for one reason above other, apart from anything else, is one of my best mates. But he was a huge figure in Chelsea's history. He kept playing through my time, but he was also still playing when Zola was there. And, you know, he ended up, you know, one of the top appearance makers ever in Chelsea's history. And he was one, again, it didn't really matter where he played him. He morphed into a centre-back for a period of time, but you couldn't tell the difference. He was a bit like Aspilicueta, but maybe a better player, you know, he was a bit, he was quicker as well. He was lightning fast as well. But if you stick him at left back, it doesn't matter. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's cool. So, and obviously we played together at Scotland. They didn't get enough Scotland caps, nowhere near as many as they should have done. I wouldn't necessarily put him as a better defender than Richard Gough, who I mentioned there. But I'll give you a good reason for that in a wee while.
Okay. All right. On the other side,
that's really interesting because I spent a lot of time as a right winger stroke attacker.
Yeah.
So I had a real interest in fullbacks. And remember, a large part of my career, I played in the left wing because I didn't care left or right or centre forward. I was fine. None of them had any difference to me. It's just be on the ball on a football field. So I liked playing with playing with left backs behind me when I was on the left. And while I was at Tranmere, I had a whole row of them. They were all super, really good players. And a guy called Ian Nolan was very, very good player. There was a guy called Jed Brannan, and Jed was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. Again, probably a better midfielder than he was a fullback, but he was a fantastic footballer. Now, that's odd to talk about Tranmere players when I've been in Scotland, etc.
That Tranmere side, what was... What division were they in when you were...
Okay, but I was there. The whole time I was there, we were in what would now be the Championship. So, okay. And three seasons in a row, we got to the playoffs. Now, for a tiny club at Tranmere, that was extraordinary. We were on the cusp of the Premier League three seasons in a row. We were playing the best football in the league as well. We had some team. I mean, most of them ended up playing the Premier League anyway, the young ones through. But there was a little period there, and it was the highest Tranmere had ever got in their history. And we really got very close. And each time we lost out by a goal. And that's hard to take, you know, like to get to the next level. But there were very, very good players. We had a very good manager. But all those throwbacks behind me were good. I'm not going to pick any. I'm going to look for other parts of my career. Andy Hinchcliffe at Everton was very, very good. Now you hear him a lot on Sky. Yeah. There was Graham Lasso was an interesting one. We are still great, great friends.
Oh, because was he at Chelsea before Blackburn, and then he went back there after.
Yeah, it was a long time. Now, I do write a lot about Graham in my book because Graham and I became really close friends. And I'd take him to theatres and things like that. My girlfriend and I would take him down to see Luke. Because he was just a wee kid from the Channel Islands.
Mm.
He was very much an outsider, and he didn't fit in very well in football. And I kind of sort of slightly took him under my wing because I was very much an outsider in football as well. So I was interested in the arts and theatre and things like that, and weird music for them. And I was explaining to Graham, you can be yourself. You can be different. It's okay. You don't have to fit in. You don't have to fight these people. Just be yourself. And he eventually did, and did brilliantly. And there's also a guy called Dylan Kerr up at Kilmarnock. We also played with Leeds. I'm only mentioning him because if I didn't, I'd never hear the end of it. But I'm actually not going to go for any of them. I'm going to throw a surprise one at you. Tony DiRigo was there for a period of time when I was at Chelsea. The second part of my Chelsea career. He was England left back for a long time as well. Now, between Lasso and DiRigo, it's a tough, tough call. Really tough call. And if I was playing wing backs, I would probably go Lasso. But DiRigo just had something else. Very much the Ashley Cole sort of style. Lightning quick. Not the tallest. Fabulous delivery with his left foot. I mean, the reason why I generally would just about plump for him is because if you thought he was a winger, if you looked at him as a winger, he was good enough to be a winger.
Yeah.
But he was a great fullback. But on top of that, in training, I loved playing against him more than anyone else in the team in Chelsea because he was the hardest to get by. And the reason being, you could dummy him and you could beat him, but he'd be back so quickly. He's like made of some material that other human beings aren't made out of. So it's kind of, it's a tough one between him and Lasso. And because Lasso and I go back so far, it honestly is not much more than a toss of the coin between Tony DiRigo and Graham Lasso. Both England fullbacks, both played a lot of times for England, and both were, to some degree, world-class players themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a tough one between those two, for sure. Is he Australian-born, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Australian-born, yeah. He still had a wee bit of an accent, still has today.
Yeah.
I could actually cheat. There are four players that I've got on a list here, and I'll tell you about them now, so that I did play in one game. And I promise you, it's not the most embarrassing moment of my career, right? But in this one game, I played for England. Yes, I know. How embarrassing. So, I played for the English Football League against the rest of the world at Wembley. And it was 80,000 people there.
Did you have to wear an England kit?
Yes, I did. I was trying to hide it from my mates, but I was honoured. Bobby Robson picked me for the league select side, which is fantastic. And the fact that on the other side they weren't that famous, the players they had on the other side, just some bloke called Maradona, a guy called Lineker.
I think I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, them sort of guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, but on my team were Brian Robson, who's an amazing player, Paul McGrath, who was unbelievable as a central defender.
Yeah.
Kenny Sanson, left back, he would be in my team immediately. But and also Liam Brady, who was the most creative, phenomenal player in midfield. But I feel it's a cheat to put them in, because I only played with them for one game. So I'm not going to put any of them in.
I'm an Arsenal fan, so if you wanted to put Sampson or Brady in, then I wouldn't stop you.
I was so tempted. I mean, they would be in the team. they would be in team if I didn't think it was a cheat. But it's a cheat.
Right?
So I wouldn't put them in a team. It came very close to playing with Liam when I was at Chelsea, and it was Inter until Milan came in for me, and Liam was over there at the time, and they wanted me to go and sign for them. I decided against it, but it would have been amazing to play with somebody like Liam, because he's exactly the type of player that I loved as much more than anyone else at the time. Him and Glenn Hoddle and Mickey Hazard were fabulous players who would be far better now than they were then, because the game would treat them better.
Okay. And your centre-backs?
So the centre-backs, right, there's two, obviously. If I was going for the best absolute defender, I would probably have to go with Martin Keown, because I played with him at Everton. And Keown, an unusual man, an unusual chap, but again, you would go through months without seeing anyone get by him in training or a game. As a marker, he was the best that I'd seen up until his current player, like, which is Tony Rudiger. Very similar. You know, and the difference being is Rudiger wants to try and play football as well, but Martin didn't. He just wanted to stop people.
Yeah, yeah.
He had this kind of quote he used to say, like, don't pass the ball to me. Don't pass the ball to me. He didn't want the ball. And for that alone, he's not getting in my team, right? Because you need to be able to play, as far as I'm concerned. So on the left, I'm going for a guy called Colin Pates. He played with me at Chelsea. Yeah. He never did play international football, and he went on and played for Arsenal as well. And the reason why he's so good is he's another one of those guys, if you put him in the modern game, he could play for Man City. He was so comfortable in the ball. He was so calm. He was a leader as well. He was a skipper at the time. Really funny geezer, a real Python-esque sense of humour. But he was exactly the sort of person who was calm and controlled that you want in your team. Now, I was fortunate to play with people like Alan Hansen with Scotland, and it's tough not putting Hansen in there, yeah, because he was phenomenal.
Yeah. Hansen,
for those who didn't see Alan Hansen, again, age group, I think the best player at centre-back I think I've ever seen in the Premier League is by a good distance, I mean a really decent distance, is Thiago Silva. That's the best I've ever seen. As a footballer, he's miles ahead. Now, we're seeing him at 37.
Right? Yeah, just about to say.
Honestly, I watch him every week now. And when I'd watched him before, and I'd watched him at PSG and stuff. And I did realise he was very, very good. And then I slowly but surely realised, oh my God, you are absolutely unbelievable. Mm. Reading the game, and Hansen was a bit like that. And of an international class easily, but maybe world class as well, Hansen. Because remember, Liverpool at the time were the best team in the world, arguably.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one to put Patesy in before him. But, you know, of those types of players, Patesy was a guy I played with a lot. And I just want him in my team. So that's one of the centre-backs. Now, you go to the other side. I played with Kevin Ratcliffe, Wales and Everton, and for a long time. And he was just lightning quick. He looked slow. It was the weirdest thing. He looked slow. He's stupidly quick. And it's so annoying when you do somebody and you run towards goal and you've got 20 yards to get there and they just cruise up and get you. You know, and he was a very, very good player for that. But I'm sorry, Ratas, you're still not getting in. I'm going to give it to Goffey. Richard Goffey.
Okay. I thought maybe he'd go in at left back. I was waiting for...
No, Goffey is...
for the name.
Easily as good at centre-back as he was at right-back or left-back or anything. And Goffey, you know, he had an incredible career, but he is often overlooked. But when you play with very, very good players, you notice the difference between good and great. And he was a great player. He really was a great footballer in every way. And, you know, funnily enough, I got on with him better now than I would have done then, because he was so single-minded and he didn't seem to care about anything else about himself and winning. But that's sometimes what you need as a professional footballer in some positions, and certainly that some personalities need that. So Goffey was exceptional. So if I'm being brutally honest, he had to be in that team. And I would put him in there. But I feel bad because people at Ratcliffe were really spectacularly good players. And I do feel really bad not putting Alan Hansen in, but tough luck. Sorry, yeah, you're famous enough, Hansen, don't worry.
Did you play with Hanson more at the back end of his career? Or?
Yeah, right at the back end. So I wouldn't have seen him necessarily at his best.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I know how good he was because I played against him earlier in his, a bit earlier in his, you know, about 2 or 3 years before that, you know, in 83, 84, that sort of thing. And he was exceptional. Well, the reason why he's exceptional is because you think, I'll get him one-on-one, it'll do him. You couldn't get him one-on-one. He just read way too well. He made sure that he positioned himself and he read the game. And those guys they're really hard to see until you've actually played at a real level. And sometimes you need to almost play with them to see how exceptional they are at doing that. And there aren't really that many. Britain's not been great at developing them. You see, Baresi's and things like that from Italy, and there's many players. And as I mentioned, Thiago Silva is one of the best I've ever seen. He's extraordinary. It's weird. And I do say, talking about Thiago Silva, I talk to my people and they kind of look at me quizzically and go, really? Honestly? And I give them this example, and this is the killer example that people never understood. Can you remember when Brazilians get beat 7-1?
He weren't on the pitch.
Correct. Everybody talked all day and all night about they're missing Neymar. No chance. And I'm going, what? They're missing Thiago Silva. That's your problem, mate.
Yeah.
And of course, David Luiz that night looked terrible. And of course, he didn't have Thiago Silva standing beside him. Luiz and Silva together were just exceptional. I mean, two beautiful footballers. Absolutely beautiful footballers. But Thiago Silva was just an absolute Rolls Royce. And still is. So I'm happy he's staying at Chelsea. Not just because I want Chelsea to do well. I just like watching. Anyway, it's Goff and Pace that's in my team.
You would have loved to play with Thiago Silva, though. But,
fabulous play. So now I've got three midfielders now. The midfield's tough. And I'm going to get straight in. I'm going to tell you one or two people are not going to get in. Play with Trevor Stephen. Again, England, many times with Everton. And
just a winner, isn't it? The amount of league titles that he's won is.
And with Rangers, Trevor was phenomenal. And a lovely man, but just very modern in the way he played. Because he wouldn't have been. It was almost impossible to categorise him position wise. You know, it really is. I look at players and think, who was he like? And he's kind of not really like anyone. Because he kind of. He moved so elegantly. He was skillful without being a trickster. But he just always seemed to do just about the right thing all the time. And it was a lovely person to play with. And I think one of these people I look back on and was underrated, but he's not getting in my team, so tough luck, Trev. I also played for a short period of time with Souness, but that was Scotland. But it was a very short period of time. And purely for that, I can't put him in my team because he didn't feel like a real teammate. But the first guy that's going to get in there is Norman Whiteside. And I played with Norman Whiteside at Everton for a couple of years. And he might have been one of the best players I ever played with. You know, certainly in the top 3 or 4. And it's another thing to say because people think, oh, Norman Whiteside, wasn't he that big, thuggish kind of Irish guy who used to drink quite a lot, right? And it's a real shame because I played with him every day in training and I played with him at Everton in games. By the time he was playing with us, he was playing in one leg. Bad injury to his knee. He was actually limping most of the time. He still scored over 15 goals from midfield in the top division. From midfield. I didn't see him give the ball away in a game or in training for the entire season. Not once. Nobody can get off. I didn't see him give it away. And you look at all the things. That, if you ask people like Gordon Strachan and Brian Robson, who they thought were the best players, they often bring up Norman. Because they all knew what he had and what he did and what he could do. The problem with Norman was he got a bad injury at the age of 15 and they removed his entire cartilage. Before that, the one weakness in Norman's game, and I mean, he could play centre midfield or centre forward. He was brilliant at both, didn't matter. But he was very slow. He was really unusually slow for a footballer. I remember him telling me one day, before they took his cartilage out, he was Ryan Giggs quick. So if you had stuck that on top of, this is the youngest guy who ever played in the World Cup.
Yeah.
He was winning FA Cups and scoring winners, you know, he was 19. And watching him play every day, you just think, and he was big, he was strong, absolutely everything about him, but he was a classy player as well. And if you look at, I'm not saying he's like De Bruyne or all of that, but see when you watch De Bruyne and Silva and people like that, see if the ball's on, it arrives. Yeah, if the ball's on, it arrives. I was watching a game the other night and it was Ruben Loftus-Cheek was playing and he didn't see the ball that should have been played. It was only there for a millisecond. David Silva would have seen it. Kevin De Bruyne would have seen it. Norman Whiteside would have seen it. And that's something that, remember the commentator, that it was so fleeting this moment that the commentator didn't see it and now the co-coms. But I did and I thought, I know the difference between the ones that are right at the top. I mean, I've seen, Jorginho wouldn't have seen it. Like, I'm talking right good players wouldn't see this ball. But the ones that are total creatives that see that and then can make it happen. And Norman was that good. And he really was spectacularly good player. So Norman's going to be a centre in midfield and I'm very, very comfortable with that choice. The next two, oddly enough, played in the same team and I only played with them internationally. And it's a shame that because there's a guy I'm going to miss out here. And Jed Brannan, who I mentioned before, played with him. He went on to play for Manchester City. Not a big name, never played internationally. But see when you play with some people you think you'd get everything to play anywhere. Doesn't matter. I ended up buying him for Motherwell when I went up there. He was our captain, centre-half, centre-midfield, right-back, left-back, didn't matter. Put him anywhere, it's fine. He's going to be one of the best players on the park, not the best player on the park, wherever you put him. End up being a third top goal scorer. And he's just not a well-known name, but he had the right attitude. So he's unlucky not to get in this team, because I would love to get him in the team, because personality-wise, he's brilliant as well. But the first one I'm going to put in is Paul McStay. And at Celtic, we knew each other well. We were boys club players together. So I could get him in my team that way. But we played for Scotland together. And Celtic fans would hate you for it because he was a one club man all his life. And he loved Celtic. But he came very close to moving to Liverpool, Man United. And there's a big part of me that would have loved for everybody in England to see him. Because you can be a top player up in Scotland. But to be honest, down south, they're all going, yeah, very good. It's only Scotland.
Yeah, it's not a name I'm familiar with, to be fair. I know.
Well, Paul McStay, if you try and look him up, his numbers are brilliant from midfield. Dominated and created games. Played absolute centre midfield and sprayed 70-yard balls like Hoddle. Scored worldies regularly from 25, 30 yards. Good at free kicks. Always classed the ball. Not quick. Not quick at all. But, you know, he could almost control a game like a Jorginho, pass a ball like a Hoddle or one of these great passers, or David Luiz. And just, there wasn't a weakness. Good in the air. You know, not as dynamic as someone like Brian Robson in those days was. But if you look at his international caps, Scotland captain, Celtic captain, but had he come down to England and played for United or Liverpool, he would have been a household name. And still would be. And it's not a shame because if you're a Celtic fan, you're delighted he spent his whole career there. That's great. But he deserved a few years in the bigger limelight so that everybody knew how good he was. If I say the name Paul McStay in Scotland to anyone, be they Celtic, Rangers or anyone, they all go, yeah, well, obviously. Of course he's going to be in your team. We know that. And I often say that to people. Like, I'll tell you a little story. I was a while back. Now, obviously, I work at Chelsea, and if I see a good player, I mention it to people down at Chelsea. And I saw a player playing in Scotland, and I said, look, you've got to buy him. And they said, oh, we've looked at him. And I said, they said he makes mistakes. And I said, yes, because he's bored. It's too easy for him. He's brilliant. So anyway, they never bought him. And I was disappointed. And I went to my mate, David Moyes, who was managing Manchester United at the time, and I said to David, you've got to buy this guy. And Moyes says, nah, I decided not to take him. And I went, all right. Anyway, Virgil van Dijk went on to be quite good. And you kind of, there are some up there in Scotland, and I can tell, because I watch football, I cover Scottish football. I pleaded with Chelsea to get Tierney. They wouldn't take him. They took
Chelsea
instead. You know, thank God for your point of view. And it's obvious now when you see him, isn't it?
Yeah.
And by the way, you still haven't seen the best. There's more to come. He's had too many injuries, but when when he's injury free for an entire season, you love him even more. I'm a Hibs fan, and I didn't tell anyone about McGinn. But the day he was signed, I was on Radio 5 Live, and they said, "Oh, Aston Villa have signed McGinn." And my words at the time were, "Well, I'm quite gutted as a Hibby, but I'm happy for John. He's going down. I'd like to speak directly to all Aston Villa fans. You jammy gits, you're going to be so in love with this guy because his work rate, his effort, his quality." So I kind of know what's needed to make that step up. The lad that's just signed for Everton, he's fine. He'll be good.
Oh, the right back, yeah.
Parson, don't worry, he's good enough. Really good enough. Let me stay with a different league to all of them. He was just a world-class player playing for Celtic at the time. And people, you know, out with Scotland don't know, but those of us who played with him and watched him do know. So Paul McStay, definitely. The other guy who's going to be in the left in the midfield is another Celtic player who ended up playing with Everton, but not at the same time as me. But we again played together in Scotland, and when we played, we had an almost telepathic understanding. And when I think back to players who I played with then, who would waltz into the modern game and be better, John Collins would. John Collins
was
a beautiful player. Lovely left foot, all that sort of stuff. But he ended up playing in teams. And this is not to be disrespectful, but when he came down south after playing with Celtic, he ended up playing with teams like Everton, who were struggling. Ended up playing with Fulham, who were struggling. But it was still class.
Yeah.
You know, and they were good at times, Everton, they were good at times, Fulham or whatever. But Jesse was a world-class player. And when I played with him, I understood that. And there was a period of time where I almost signed with Celtic. And I had a chance to sign, and I would have been playing with McStay. I'd been playing with Jesse. Tam Boyd was left back. And they were players I'd love to have played with, because I played with them internationally. But certainly John Collins, hugely underrated player. So I'm kind of happy to put underrated players in here. I could put bigger names in here if you wanted, but I don't. I put the players I think should be in. John Collins would be one of them.
Yeah, we had a sort of Celtic version of this feature session, and yeah, someone from a podcast called Gig Pod came on, and they had John Collins in their team, and yeah, just absolutely raving about what a player he was.
And that person knows what they're talking about, because Jesse was brilliant and a really brilliant player. It's a shame though, because I mean, I'm happy to play for Everton because I like Everton, but again, stick him in the top team or the second top team. There's players out there that if you stick them in Man City, you'll suddenly think, oh, he's world class. Wow, he's amazing. You know, and, but they don't actually shine as much, you know, when they're playing with lesser teams, because it's a struggle for them. You need to be lucky with those moves. John Shaw anyway, but you know, again, classically, I don't know, and he's another, almost every player I talk to you about here, put them in the modern game and they'd be better than they were then. And John's definitely one of those. And technically, his technical play, technical knowledge was exceptional as well. So definitely Jason. Okay. Well, that's the midfield, isn't it? That's the three in the midfield.
White side
McStay and Collins.
So you're two ahead. Are they like number 10s or are they?
Yes. The two ahead is, you could almost play, in fact, let's not do that. Let's do a 10 and two strikers. And the two strikers are, the 10 is going to be, I'm putting Peter Beardsley in as a 10. I played with Peter for a short period of time at Everton and he was genius.
Yeah.
You look back now, and you'll often see the people that are on the telly and you're going, oh, Alan Shearer, this, and, you know, the big names that you get on the telly now from that sort of era. And I'm thinking, yeah, but Peter was the best. Because he made everybody else look superb when he played with him. And most of the players I played with him would have told you that. Back in those days, most of the clubs played 4-4-2. So he'd be a second striker as opposed to a 10. But his game knowledge, movement, awareness, skills, he was amazing with Liverpool. He was really amazing with Liverpool. He was also brilliant with Newcastle as well. And I wouldn't hesitate for a second. If I was playing a current team, there isn't a current team that he wouldn't get a game for. He would get a game for Man City easy now. And that's high praise. I love Man City. But he's good enough. He can get a game for them now. So if you can get a game for Man City, you can get a game for anyone. absolutely, of all the people I'm talking about, he would be suited better to the modern game than he was to that game, more than anyone else. When you're born at a time, there's nothing you can do about it. You just need to live within it. And he did really well within that. But certainly a player that really never drank, very professional. Wasn't the tallest player, but you never even noticed it because, you know, he worked so hard, he cruised so hard, he did everything you wanted for a pro to do, but he was an exceptional world-class footballer. Had he played for Brazil, he would have been world famous and still talked about, you know, but he played for England and yeah, he was well liked. But when we look back on those teams, sadly, he's not the first name that comes out. Well, he should be. Because he was better than the next.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of ex-pros from around that time, especially that Newcastle side when he was a bit older, talk about how good he was and what an influence he was as well on them. Because they had a few sort of youngsters.
It's hard to say. I mean, I feel sorry for Peter. There's been some dark things happening around his the last few years. But you know, we're asking about footballers. Also, I also found him among the most pleasant people I'd ever met when I worked with him. So, Peter, I always like to mention his name because he's kind of been written out a wee bit and he shouldn't be written out. Great players should be remembered and he should be. And he is one, I suppose, if you went on YouTube, you'd find plenty there. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Enough great goals for Liverpool and enough great goals for England. And I like creative players. That's the other thing as well. And he was brilliantly creative. Yeah. I remember playing against for Everton once, near the end of my time at Everton. And I wasn't the number of manager, Howard Kendall. Anyway, played in this game against Watford. Tight game. Anyway, I got the ball wide out on the right-hand side. I made a dummy run and I flicked the ball inside and it was a kind of silver kind of movement. A silver kind of movement. Peter, who was 50 yards away, figured out what I was doing. Made this weird run. Knew I'd see it. But didn't stop to look, just went. And I didn't know anyone else I was playing with at the time that would have made the run. Anyway, I put him through. He got a ball 1-1 and scored, and we won 1-0. And as he walked off, I'm trying to think, it was a former England and Watford keeper who was in that night. What was his name again? Oh, I can't remember his name. And David James, that's it, David James. And he came off afterwards and he said, I'd have been proud of that pass. That's one of the biggest compliments I've ever been played in my life. And I do remember that to this day. And I've had many disappointments when I left Everton. The biggest actually was I couldn't play with Peter for a longer period of time. So that was a hard one to take. But yeah, Peter, quality. So we've got two strikers. I'm cheating slightly, right? I'm going to give you some names of the ones that aren't getting in, right? Ali McCoist, Scotland. Maurice Johnson was an amazing player for Scotland. Just incredible goal scorer. Brian McClair, probably my best mate. Scored a lot of goals for United and Scotland. But they're not getting in because the guy called Doug Leash has to get in. And I played with Kenny in Scotland. And Kenny, I don't really see anymore. I'd watched him when I was growing up with Celtic, watching Celtic, and I'd seen him come through. And he was a better player when he went to Liverpool. But he was a more exciting player when he played for Celtic because he would do the extremely unusual things that you couldn't believe. Whereas when he went to Liverpool, he was better, but just kept doing the right thing. I just loved playing him. And I got to play with him a few times for Scotland. And he's a legendary figure. And there's a reason why he's a legendary figure. He was one of the best players, if not the best player, that Scotland's ever produced. Lucky enough to play with him. Played against him quite a few times as well. Rather annoyingly, Liverpool won the league down at Stamford Bridge once and he was player manager and he scored the winner. I mean, come on. Player, manager, score the winner, win the league. Give it a break. And he scored the winner in the European Cup as it was then. So he's done everything. His play was fantastic. And that was it. He was just absolutely and utterly brilliant.
Yeah, but take it, that's the best player that you've ever played with.
Yeah. I didn't play when he was at his very best. I played against him when he was at his best. But you know, when I played against Maradona, obviously he'd be the best player I've ever played with, clearly. But certainly in those days when I was playing, there was nobody else. I mean, there's some great goal scorers like Rushy and things like that and Lineker. But as a football player, he was a league of his own. I remember the day he left Celtic. £440,000. Seared in my memory. And Liverpool just sold Kevin Keegan. And remember that the English papers were all saying, who is this Scottish bloke they're getting in? No, Celtic fans were going, you have no idea what you're getting. And we all knew. And we didn't argue. We weren't annoyed with Kenny because, you know, he'd done great with Celtic in his time. And that's one of the things about it. You can tell the ones that are going to be fine. Celtic actually had about five or six at the time that, you know, Lou McCarrie and Josh Connolly and Danny McGrain, they could have all been David Haye, one of the greatest players I've ever seen. But Kenny was the one who went and he did it and he was absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, Kenny absolutely has to be in there. And the other thing, apart from he scored goals and he created stuff and he did everything you wanted a good footballer to do, but that creativity was always there. And he was selfless. You know, so if he played with somebody, they would make great runs for him. So him and Rush were amazing together. Him and Aldo were, you know, him and whoever he played with, it didn't matter. Yeah. They were great together. So I need to find a striker to play alongside him, don't I? Now, to be fair, that's not that difficult because it doesn't really matter who you put in front of Beardsley and Douglas. They'll get chances if they're a decent goal scorer. It was a tough one because I've mentioned people like McCoist and Mo, but I'm thinking of the strikers I played with. And I just have to be brutally honest, there's two who were staggeringly good goal scorers. One of them was Kerry Dixon in my time at Chelsea.
Okay.
Kerry, his numbers were off the scale. And he was Chelsea's second ever top goal scorer, I think, which is amazing in the era he was playing in.
Yeah.
And if anyone ever told me he would be overtaken by a midfielder, I'd have said, you're nuts. Then who knew that Frank Lampard was going to turn up? But Kerry was a phenomenal goal scorer. I don't think he was the best footballer I've ever seen. But he just always made the right moves. He always went in the right positions. And for somebody whose touch was okay, just kind of okay, if you put a goal in front of him, he's the best touch you've ever seen in your life. How does that work? And it always confused me. Wherever you put him, he was, again, stupidly fast. And he didn't look like it, but you would do the sprints. And most players are quite fast, and you've got a few players in the team that are really quite fast.
Yeah.
We couldn't get near Kerry. We absolutely couldn't get near him. And he's one of these guys that if you'd have put him in a decent level 100 metres race, you know, he would be top quality. So you've got that, it helps. But if you're a natural finisher on top of that, but he's got competition for this position.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah. The other one I've not mentioned yet, and it's John Aldridge. Now,
was that at Tranmere?
Yeah, John Aldridge and I were at Tranmere for 4 and a bit years together. And he was, by some distance, the best finisher I ever played with, by a distance. And when I say ever seen him, I'm talking, I played against Ian Rush. I think Aldo was is at least as good a finisher, and maybe better. The numbers stack up. If you ever, anyone goes back and looks at it, the numbers stack up. Aldo was extraordinary. I couldn't believe it. You know, I went to try me, and you put a ball in a vague area in the middle. He was there. He just always was there. And if you think of strikers that's in front of goal, and I'm not talking Timo Werner here, I'm talking about people that when you put the ball in front of goal, you know it's going to end up in the net. I found myself after a period of time, if I put Aldo through, one-on-one with a keeper, or if I put the ball in, and I could see who was reaching the head first, I'd start
back for the half final.
Yeah, I'd start turning away. It was that ridiculous. He's scoring things like 40-odd goals a season. In the Championship at that point, which was madness, because he should have been in the Premier League. He'd been at Atletico, was it Bilbao he went to? Anyway, we've gone over to Spain, but he'd been at Liverpool with Russia and that. And the numbers just kept on going. It didn't matter where he played. The numbers, funnily enough, I remember Aldo telling me this story. Score the goal against Napoli. Barcelona. It was Barcelona. And Maradona came up to him and said, fantastic. That goal was as big as a house. Maradona saying you're great. But he was extra. Again, another player who, you know, I wouldn't put him in my midfield, you know, as a technical player. But at that, he was extraordinary. So I honestly, I would struggle between Kerry and Aldo because both of them were absolutely exceptional. It kind of hurts, but I probably have to give it to Aldo. And I want to give it to Kerry because I've gotten a bit better with Kerry than I did with Aldo, particularly near the end of my time in Tranmere. Everyone gets on great now after your career. That's almost a given. But to be fair, Aldo would score for any team at any level in any era. So I'd have to give it to Aldo. John Aldridge, fabulous goal scorer.
Yeah, that's a top side. I didn't expect anything less.
I wanted to give you is honesty, but also players that not everyone would immediately think of. Because we can all rattle. I could give you just a whole bunch of the biggest names and try and impress people. It's not about that. It's about who were fantastic, who were out of their time, who could have played a whole bunch of different positions, who would have moved about. And those guys, I have to mention two people very quickly before I go. There was two players that were wingers that I played with that I'd love to have put in there and kind of deserved to, but for two reasons I can't. Both similar. I played with Davy Cooper, who was a Rangers player. I played with him in Scotland a few times. And he, if you ever get a chance to see some of his work, dribbling skills, amazing. Free kicks, Letizia and Beckham standard, unbelievable. Right? Incredible amount of free kicks he scored. But he stayed the vast majority of his career in Rangers. So down south, people don't know. But I mean, there are stands and things like that named after him in Scotland. He died very young, but he was an exceptional talent. He's not sneaked in the team, probably because his work rate was questionable. But really a fabulous player. Another guy, I'm going to give you one more name just before I go. I played with a guy when I was at Tranmere called Ivano Benetti. Now, again, a name that might not jump out at you, right?
Any relation to Peter or...?
No. Ivano was an Italian player who came over to play in England. We didn't know much about him. And he was signed by Aldo to replace me. And at training on the first day, we just caught each other's eye after doing a couple of tricks. And we spent the next year trying to basically outdo each other with skills. Not to get in the team, just to impress each other, right?
Yeah.
You know within seconds if you're in the company of a world-class player. And I knew within seconds I was. And I'm thinking, Ivano Benetti. So anyone who's listening here who knows Ivano is probably thinking, well, Ivano Benetti as in Grimsby, Tranmere and Dundee. Right? That's what people are thinking, right? Try European Cup final with Sampdoria, which is where he was at the top.
Oh, that was a top side, that Sampdoria side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he was one of the most skillful players in that team, right? And he was unbelievable. And I played with him for a while and became great, great, great friends and still great friends to this day. But if I was playing a winger, I'd put Ivano in there because he hardly played any games for Tranmere because he fell out with the manager. And because he was such an extreme personality, that was it. Finished, dead, gone.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, when you play the real world-class people, you immediately know. And Ivano was one of them. But sadly, Ivano, just like Aldo, I'm going to be putting you on the bench.
And who'd be captain in your side?
Tough one, that. Gough, the incredible captain. Pates, great captain next day. Clarkey was fine as captain. Kenny was a great captain. They're all, a lot of them are captains, aren't they? But no, it would probably Gough, just personality-wise. Gough was the right personality. But in actual fact, I would say the captain on my side is as important as how I felt the captaincy was, which is unimportant in me. I could stuff for 850 games who was captain, even if it was me. The very English thing. Out with England. To a little degree, Scotland. Out with England. Nobody cares. Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, in like Spain and Italy and stuff, they just tend to give it to the guy with the most caps. Like, a lot of the time, the goalkeepers are.
We don't care. It's not important. It really isn't important. There are some people who are leaders, and that's good. You know, you can see Tony Adams and John Terry and all those names, and that's fine. It doesn't matter if you get the armband on or not. You still do it. You still do that sort of stuff. It's always the man. Remember playing with Scotland. Remember counting one day we had 9 captains on the pitch. They were captains for their clubs, but you just think, is it in any way important to get the armband on? And the answer was no. It is, and it shouldn't be. It absolutely shouldn't be. So captain, give it to Goffey, but could be any of them apart from Big Neville. Wouldn't let them know.
Yeah. And in terms of managers, have you got a...
I played for a short wee period under Jock Stein, who's the greatest manager ever. Played under Sally Ferguson. He wasn't bad either. There's two guys I loved. A guy called John Neal at Chelsea and a guy called Colin Harvey, who's at Everton. I'd probably give it to John Neal because with what he had, he created a beautiful team out of very limited resources, and I liked him as much as anyone. But Colin Harvey and those four absolutely jump out at me. And I also have to mention John King at Tranmere, because he was completely strange. Can I tell you one quick story about John King, very quickly? Said to us one day, said, right, two lads up, stay up for corners, right? Don't come back, just two of you stay up, you and Johnny Morrissey. And I went, all right, it's away from home, but you'd normally just leave one up. And he went, I said, make it three. Aldo, you stay up there. They'll have to leave four back. And we're going, no, you can't do that. This is like 10 minutes before we go. You can't do that. And eventually he goes, actually, we're going to leave four up today. And we're going, oh, don't be stupid. Oh, God's sake. And we're all looking at each other. He's lost it now. He goes, kiss him up and you stay up. You stay up. And we're all looking at each other thinking, well, we're going to ignore him, right? And then he's walking out of the dressing room. He comes back in and he goes, that was silly. I've not thought this through, guys. Thank God. We're leaving five up. And we're like, oh, you can't do that. Anyway, we went out and played and we didn't leave five up. We left two up and two at the edge of the box and that sort of stuff. I can't remember how many years, but many years later, 15, 20 years later, I was watching a game and the manager left five up, kind of outside the box and up the pitch. And I thought, that's amazing. That manager was Pep Guardiola. So
ahead of his time.
Maybe Kingy was mad, or maybe it was ahead of his time, I don't know. But yeah, he was a lovely man. So we missed.
Nice. Yeah, but before we let go, Pat, have you got anything you want to sort of let us know about or plug?
I'd mentioned that the Accident Football book that I'd written. I've told you some stories here. I've really edited a lot of things. A lot of these things that I've been telling you about don't actually appear in this book. They appear in the next one, which I've just finished writing. But if you don't read and don't read many books, you should try. And it doesn't matter if it's mine or not. It doesn't matter. It'll always help you. You learn more about life and learn more about people. So whatever age you are, it's something to get into. So it might be the Accidental Football. It might be something else. Have a go at it.
It's a great message to leave it on, Pat. Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's a really good team. And yeah, just thanks for coming on.
Absolute pleasure. I'm going to rush off and watch a football game now.
Go for it. Nice one. Cheers, Pat.
Awesome pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.